One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of FFS Another Brexit Podcast. I'm Jason Arthur.
And I'm Abby Tomlinson.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
You've been around the world.
I know. And now I'm back.
So. Yeah. Great to have you back. So we're here to give you all of the latest developments, thoughts and feelings on the increasingly nerve-wracking Brexit debate.
But not as you know it. As regular listeners know, our campaign is different and this podcast strives to be too.
So week on week, we've been bringing you new, interesting and diverse voices and perspectives. And this time, guess what? It's no different.
To try and see through some of the noise of recent weeks, we've got budding journalist Ben Gartside with us to give us his analysis on the latest on Brexit. So what a week. We have had an extremely busy week here at FFS and the People's Vote campaign.
Well, we have. You've been gallivanting.
Yeah, I've had a very relaxing week.
what did we do? Well, last week, FFS joined forces with Our Future, Our Choice, and we took a group of young people to meet with Tom Watson and Joe Swinson to talk about getting more young people engaged in democracy and to ask leading politicians why they can't just work together to stop No Deal. It was good.
I did hear it was an extremely productive session, and I'm glad at least some politicians are listening. So Boris Johnson, if you want to meet, we have lots of young people with things to say to you.
Yeah, lots of things to say to you. But yeah, it was good. It was good. And it was refreshing to hear politicians being prepared to say they put down party allegiances for the greater good of the country. I'm not sure whether anyone's going to listen to them, sadly. But at least that Joe and Tom, thank you for saying that. And then more broadly, the People's Vote campaign, we made the headlines last week, for the launch of our Farmers for a People's Vote campaign, which kicked off with a rather unusual stunt.
I didn't think when I joined FFS I'd be part of a campaign that was involved with herding a flock of sheep down Whitehall, but there you go.
Yeah, no, it's odd. but is it the oddest thing that's happened in the Brexit world? Probably not.
That is true. And we should point out that no sheep have been harmed in the campaigns for a People's Vote. They had a lovely day out in central London.
it was great for them. So this week, we also had the leaking of a cross-government study on the impact of No Deal, called Operation Yellowhammer. I'm always, just as an aside, interested in how they name these reports.
Yeah.
What does Yellowhammer mean?
I've never seen a yellowhammer, so I don't really understand where they would have got it from.
Yeah, it's nonsense. But despite having a nonsensical title, it had some pretty scary revelations, which Ben is going to help us dive into later. But safe to say, No Deal, Abby, isn't good.
No, it's not looking great.
No.
So onwards, FFS. Over the next 7 days, FFS is all over the place. We start our summer tour in Bristol on Thursday and then head all the way up to Edinburgh on Friday.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can say that we are a London-centric campaign or that we're being complacent.
Absolutely not.
In less good news, while we're travelling the country trying to inspire and motivate young people, Boris Johnson is heading to Europe to meet with world leaders, where he is bound to have the exact opposite effect.
Indeed. And the thought of him representing us on the world stage as Prime Minister is like literally a nightmare come true. He's offended pretty much everyone in Europe already, but I still bet he'll manage to alienate some more.
Yep. And after asking aides whether Angela Merkel was in the East German secret police and calling Macron a jumped up Napoleon, I'm sure his meetings with him are bound to go swimmingly well.
Fun times ahead. And lastly, we also have the Big Ten Ideas Festival next week. Our very own Amanda and Izzy will be taking part in a session on future leaders. Tickets are £15 for students and are available at bigtent.org.uk. So make sure you get yours and take part.
Yeah, do go to that. I am offended though, because I am also speaking this week at the Byline Festival.
Oh, I'm sorry. On Sunday. I'm sorry, Jason.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This week, we're very excited to have with us journalist Ben Gartside. He's going to help us unpack the recent goings on. So thank you so much for joining us, Ben.
No problem.
First things first, we always ask our guests who they would give an FFS award to for something ridiculous in the context of Brexit. So who is your award winner?
I think we've got to go today with the letter Boris Johnson has sent to Donald Tusk, where he's essentially asked for the backstop to be removed, which is very 2016. And is comprehensively being rejected by the EU, of course. So I think if you're giving the award to kind of the weirdest thing said about Brexit this week, it's got to go to him.
Yeah, and he must obviously know that it's going to be rejected, right? So what do you think the game... What's the game plan here?
I think the game is two-sided game of chicken in terms of both to get MPs to kind of back the deal and to get the EU to move, kind of give some movement on the backstop. A while ago, kind of there were rumours that the middle ground deal that the EU were looking at was kind of the backstop with a side codicil or kind of a side amendment, which would have kind of codified alternative arrangements and put the onus on them to kind of look into them and look into making sure that certain technologies are done by a certain date in order to make it seem like it was a two-sided arrangement. But given Johnson's recent rhetoric on the matter and the people appointed to cabinet, it seems increasingly unlikely that that will be a place where a deal can be done.
Yeah, no backstop is acceptable. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, no, it seems very unlikely that a backstop will be accepted by the cabinet. I mean, weirder things have happened. It's worth saying, obviously, that Johnson did vote for a backstop in Meaningful Vote 3, as did a handful of the other hard Brexiteers in the cabinet.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see how things go.
Yeah, I think looking to either his statements or voting record in any issue is probably not going to be enlightening on Boris thinks or will do now.
No, you've got the weird thing of saying, well, oh, he's backtracked on a lot of things previously, and it's just how far is he willing to backtrack, especially given the very, very strong rhetoric he's had on the issue. But one thing that could be interesting is a withdrawal agreement, I think, would have a lot more Labour support given their kind of move towards people's vote. There's been rumours of Stephen Kinnock and Lisa Nandy and a few other MPs setting up a group of on the large side 40, on the small side 20 MPs who are willing to vote for a withdrawal agreement. So it'll be interesting to see whether any of them actually go through the lobbies to vote for it, or how strong their support is, or if there is actually a vote on this government of national unity, would they back a moderate pro-EU Labour MP like Hilary Benn? Or is this more rhetoric without any action in order to prevent no deal from nominally anti-no deal MPs?
Yeah. I suspect more of the latter than something substantive. But.
So, Ben, a lot of people might have heard about it in the news this week, but won't really know what it means. So could you try and explain for us what Operation Yellowhammer is and why it's important?
So it's Whitehall's secret plan for no deal. And it's been buzzing around in the news for the past like 6 months. And there's been a lot of rumours about what's in it. And the Sunday Times has got a big report comprehensively covering it, which cover like things from civil unrest and what's going to happen in Northern Ireland to everyday things like food and petrol. And according to the report, the type of fresh food supply will decrease. Traffic could be caused by border delays, could affect fuel distribution, issues of kind of medicine. We've heard a lot about insulin and Matt Hancock talking about fridges on the main.
So all stuff that wasn't on a big red bus.
Kind of stuff that 2016. Yeah, stuff that you do not normally worry about in terms of any typical government idea. And it's been disputed by Michael Gove publicly, and a couple of prominent Brexiteers are saying, oh, this is an ancient report done by old junior ministers. I think it was Paul Brand at ITV said, actually, this is dated the 1st of August. It updated ones are sent to devolved administrations whenever they're updated, and this fits with the most recent copies. So there's kind of some rumours about whether this is the most extreme version or the expected outcome. That's disputed. It seems to be more likely the expected outcome than anything else, but the amount of preparation is still kind of not what it would ideally be or what you'd expect.
And so there are two interesting things here for me about this. One is trying to play the report as this Remainer stitch up when it was written by the civil service and that it's outdated when it was 3 weeks ago and it was released. But then secondly, given that it's almost impossible to see how we will be in a better state in 70 odd days, so that, you know, we won't be fully prepared to deal with these consequences, why they aren't just fronting it now and being honest about the impact of it, given that if no deal does happen and what, you know, Yellowhammer says happens, then they're going to be the ones who are going to have to deal with the consequences of it, right? Politically. Definitely. And also in terms of the chaos. Definitely. Within the UK.
Because we were talking off air about kind of the reality of no deal, and one thing that could be a big issue is Purdah. So obviously there's been a vote of no confidence, rumoured a lot, and kind of looks like one will happen. Corbyn said one will happen in his speech that was yesterday at the time talking. And if that does happen, no deal happens, and you either have no deal by default, where we leave on October 31st after a vote of no confidence, or we have a vonk happening after October 31st. Purdah, which is the thing that stops the government using its powers in order to make itself benefit during an election, could have a seriously detrimental effect on very simple things that we normally take for granted. For example, would government contracts be able to be signed during Purdah under no deal? Because I think it's Faisal Islam of the BBC had a good report out recently which said that the potential hurt from no deal won't be day one, day two, it won't be the 1st or 2nd of November, it'll be 2 or 3 weeks after, it'll be once the supply chains are properly hit. Once it's no longer the government being able to kind of shepherd and drive things through. If we're in a state of Purdah, then there is obviously even more skepticism about what could happen. Governments can't sign contracts. They can't, I don't believe, make ministerial statements. So you've got potentially a exacerbating thing that could keep the government in just simply because by voting no confidence, there is, if you are, for example, in a port city or a port constituency or kind of a Northern Irish constituency, it's very hard to justifiably vote through a vote of no confidence when you know in the short to medium term that could have a seriously detrimental effect.
So just at the point where everything is going absolutely bonkers, that's when the government would have hamstrung itself if there is Purdah.
So
that sounds ideal.
It's not the best, and it's a indicatory of the issue of kind of the anti-no deal MPs in terms of you've got quite a lot of them who are unwilling to vote for a people's vote. There are quite a lot of them who are unwilling to vote for May's deal or any alternatives. And you've got the complete lack of compromise that has happened has meant that there are three or four options with 250 votes when they need 320. And what this has meant is that every time they vote against one of these compromises that aren't quite what people wanted, it means that kind of it is effectively a vote for no deal. Mm. And that's especially what we've seen in terms of, as much as Raab and Johnson can be criticised, they voted for the deal more times than almost every Labour MP. Mm. They voted to practically stop no deal. Same with Philip Hammond kind of being attacked as a Remainer. Philip Hammond's voted for Brexit three times. He's voted for a certainty with a deal.
Mm.
The MPs attacking him now, who were very happy to vote against MV1 and MV2, it's very unclear what kind of they've done practically to stop what will be kind of potentially calamitous situations.
Mm.
Considering you've been like working at the centre of this all and broken some really important stories on Brexit, for example, like, you know, Liam Fox planning to scrap food standards to win the trade deal with Trump. What do you think was the most shocking news story on Brexit in the last few months? Because we've had quite a few.
There's a lot there. I think potentially kind of the ferry story and stuff around kind of no deal and transport. And I think one that's slipped through a net a bit is preparing businesses and preparing groups like that. Because one thing that wasn't quite noticed in the reshuffle is that there is now, if I remember correctly, no business minister who was there pre-May, which means you've got a lot of ministers who are completely new to their department.
Mm.
They don't have a clue. You've got a lot of advisory groups like Make UK, who I think are in favour of revoke, the CBI, who are in favour of a deal. There's no hard Brexit business group. It's a contradiction. You have a lot of those groups who've kind of got a lot more institutional knowledge than their ministers, who are in a lot worse situation. Like the Lib Dems recently did a campaign. I think it was only 3 out of 10 exporters had the correct tax numbers for exporting across Calais. And this has now apparently been rectified, but it kind of speaks to the wider issue of just general unpreparedness and stuff that you physically can't prepare for. It's not a matter of the government aren't doing enough or private businesses aren't doing enough. It's kind of you can't game every strategy and every solution. And the reactiveness of government and the ability for the government to be reactive is going to be absolutely crucial if we do have no deal. And I think I was chatting to one Labour advisor who is kind of works around Brexit, and he was telling me a while ago that, I'm prepared for the inquiry. I'm prepared for when the government has to go in front of a select committee or go in front of a big committee and say, this is what happens. This is why X, Y, Z has happened. So
yeah.
I think general preparedness and the amount that we have allowed no deal to kind of seem as a feasible solution, where no deal is a medium state that will then see nothing kind of occur. We will have to go back and negotiate with the EU if no deal does happen.
Mm.
And if no deal does happen, there is no way in hell that the negotiating hand will be stronger after it. So there are a lot of things there, but I think the ability for people to be duped into the sense of kind of there is a maximum amount of preparedness. There is a state of preparation where we are ready for no deal. There will never be a readiness for no deal. There will just be a medium ground, a shade of grey.
Yeah. Well, there are many grounds on which you can criticise Theresa May, but one of the ones that hits me the most is the amount of time she spent saying that no deal was better than a bad deal, only then to getting closer to the end of her reign, obviously switched tack. But she essentially legitimised for the public the sense that no deal was acceptable, that we'd be absolutely fine. And we're now in a place where reports are being leaked about how calamitous it will be and we're underprepared. And it's absurd when you think about it in that sense.
Yeah, and I think the obvious issue is that there's a lot of political positioning that's kind of happened, and you've had quite a few MPs who've previously said, like, oh, we're on board with Brexit, we can make this work, when it has been beneficial for them in terms of internal party placing or kind of beneficial for them in terms of their constituency. And there was a great piece by Stephen Bush in The New Statesman a while ago that said if every MP just voted for what they actually wanted, we would have had something passed.
Mm.
But kind of, and it's kind of like he framed it quietly to the credit of MPs like Kate Hoey and against MPs like Gareth Snell, of kind of Kate Hoey for lack of any other praise. You can say that she has consistently voted for exactly what she's wanted and has not been inhibited either by
She's her terrible,
voters or a constituency party. While Gareth Snell has continuously tried to and failed to walk a tightrope where kind of asking for May's deal to be brought back when it would have been incredibly helpful for the courses in favour of a deal to actually counter the narratives of Steve Baker and the European Research Group. If you'd said at the time, like, I'm a Labour MP and I really support this deal, there is kind of a lot of people who have said things that weren't beneficial to their overall cause because it was beneficial for them in a short period.
Yeah.
Or if a certain thing was going to happen, they needed it to happen. I think it speaks overall to the idea of everyone is expecting the other side to compromise. And because of that, the default will happen. Yeah. And virtually no one wants the default. It's nobody's first choice. Interestingly, Cummings has been quite favourable to a deal privately and in previous blog posts, if I remember correctly. So it'll be interesting kind of when the crux comes to it, how many of Boris's advisors do a May or how many people around Boris do a May and go, actually, we needed a deal.
So yeah, yeah.
I think we could just be repeating history, which is always a really fun sense of something when you've kind of reported saying, oh, they've changed their mind again. Oh, this is again. Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, one thing we always ask guests and they almost always say, we're not going to do this, is to predict the future. And so it would be good to get your sense on the extent to which you think there will be a general election versus, you know, a government of national unity, although I guess the two aren't mutually exclusive. No. What's your take on?
So I've tried to game what I think is most likely at this stage, and I'm not going to predict anything, but I'll say kind of where everything falls down. So I'll say why everyone else is wrong, but I won't say why I'm right. The government of national unity seems entirely dead. Like, if I had to bet at the moment, I would say that no deal is the most likely outcome. I could see a vote of no confidence succeeding if the relevant parties get their act together, but that is kind of a big if. It would require kind of independents and ex-Labour MPs to kind of implicitly vote in favour of Corbyn, which is the biggest criticism of the GNU, which is it would have to be, there is no other way apart from it being fronted by specifically Corbyn and Labour as a whole.
Not Ken Clark? Not.
No. For some reason, I can't see that a still pro-Brexit Tory MP would not be voted for by Joe Swinson, the Lib Dems and ultra-Remainers in the Labour Party. It would have to be Corbyn that would chair a GNU because, especially considering half the Labour MPs are currently going through re-selection, I would quite like to see a lot of the moderate MPs who have been pretending to be on the left of the party for the past year go to their constituency Labour Party and go, well, do you know how I said that I was really on board with Corbyn? Well, about voting for Hillary Benn in Vancouver to be Prime Minister. Yeah. So to me, that's a complete dead end. If no deal happens, there will be questions about whether a vote of no confidence is the right thing to do. Because if you look at the MPs who are wavering on a vote of no confidence on the Conservative side, and the Independent side too, people like Ian Austin, Nick Bowles, who are, again, not against Brexit, but are against the specific type of Brexit that looks most likely at this stage. The impact of Perdera upon the need for a reactive government is one thing that MPs really do need to consider. I've put funnily, and then I've put four question marks after it. But funnily enough, even if a vote of no confidence does happen, it will exacerbate how bad no deal is, but will undeniably cause the confidence of the government to dwindle in and outside of Parliament. However, if the move could demonstrate a lack of confidence and will make the issue causing the lack of confidence significantly worse over the short and medium term. Obviously, this is unless a government of national unity can happen, which it won't. So I think general election is most likely. And I think it is now the absolutely only feasible way for kind of your campaign to achieve what it wants to. It would need like the work. I think the one thing you've done very well is working internally within Labour to kind of make it a position that cannot be avoided, especially by working within the Parliamentary Labour Party, kind of a group with so little capital within the Labour movement at the moment to kind of go, this is a red line. So I think kind of the only way your campaign can succeed is now via a Labour government or kind of via a a short-term unity government that I think would only be able to occur after an election, specifically, because I think there needs to be a specific vote for a majority of pro-EU MPs or pro-EU parties for that to occur. But overall, I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. I think the ability to predict politics has gone so badly wrong. I remember being with chatting to two very senior journalists at the time of the Tory leadership election, both of whom were telling me absolutely confidently that Matt Hancock was going to win. So I will hesitate from making a prediction, but I think there's kind of multiple reasons why alternative things will fall down.
Great.
And finally, you mentioned a bit there, but we're genuinely interested in sort of what your view of both FFS and the People's Vote campaign has been over the last year or so. What do you think has worked and what hasn't worked, in your opinion?
So kind of to expand on my earlier thoughts, kind of what has worked is kind of lobbying within the Labour Party and kind of being that at times kind of critical, but kind of critical friend and saying, like, we are fine to back Corbyn. There are loads of people now around the shadow cabinet who are openly saying, like, John McDonnell had an interview this morning saying that he'd campaigned for Remain. Yeah. I don't think anyone would have seen that kind of in 2015, like John McDonnell waving the 27-starred flag. but kind of the ability to campaign within Labour and make it so that a people's vote is unavoidable if a Labour government does get in is something that's been incredibly strong. But what I would say is kind of a weakness, and I think it is counterintuitive to the nature of a campaigning for a specific thing, but kind of the inability to compromise. I think one of the worst moves by the campaign kind of was during the EAF, the vote, where kind of it was quite explicitly obvious that in the indicative votes that kind of pro-EU MPs had been whipped to vote against EAF, because while very beneficial to the narrative of the people's vote of going, it's the most popular option apart from May's deal, it did also mean that the most popular option was a referendum, which was had been ruled out so many times by Theresa May, and then her withdrawal agreement, which kind of led to her continuously trying to sell the deal to Labour, which led to her being no confidence, obviously. Kind of hindsight is 2020, but I think the inability of all MPs, and I do kind of mean all MPs from your Schengen would be great for the UK to kind of, I don't see the problem of not having insulin, like the inability for anyone to make kind of a political coalition that exists over 320 MPs has been a real indictment over the political system over the past 3 years.
That is very interesting, and it's a tension at the heart of Brexit, right? Is there a softer middle ground form of Brexit that is acceptable, or is it you're in or you're out? I guess we're very much in the, we want to be in. So to the extent that we haven't compromised, you're probably right on that front. But really interesting. Thank you for joining us.
And I'm sure it's going to be a busy few months for journalists and campaigners alike.
Yeah, more 6:30 meetings.
Ben could probably go on holiday for the next month, no? Great. So thanks once again to Ben, and thank you to you for listening to our little podcast once again.
Make sure to tell your friends and join us again next week for more insight on the Brexit chaos. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.